Welcome to another Murray Musings, where we have Claire and my name is Peter. If y'all did not know, here today, Scott is late,
As
per
usual.
usual. Let's be honest. Let's be real. And we will probably have a good 10-15 minute
Maybe half an hour.
discussion. Yeah, talking about his interactions with Casper Ruud and Nick, since he won't be here to defend himself. And so anyway, we just had the US Open, and we had the gentleman who made 4 Grand Slam finals, won 4 US Opens, and is a 26-time major champion. And of course, I'm not talking about Novak Djokovic. I'm talking about Alfie Hewitt, who beat his doubles partner, Gordon Reid. So did you watch that match? It was amazing.
No, I didn't.
Okay, that's fine.
I couldn't find where it was screened at all.
Okay.
I mean, I know it would have been on Sky Sports somewhere, but I only had like a limited option with the Sky Sports outlet, and I'm really disappointed to not have seen it, because I mean Gordon Reid and Alfie Hewitt together, like, brilliant.
Amazing. Yeah.
Was that a great match?
It was a great match, with Gordon Reid's backhands and his forehand was good, but Alfie's forehand was just firing away. And I mean, they know each other's game so well, of course. So I mean, it was just an amazing match. And I just wanted to get that in and see Scott's reaction, because Scott is more, let's just say this, because he's been in our group chats, like many of them, just talking about Novak's 24 majors, etc. And I just wanted to see his reaction. But of course he's late. Of course he's not here right now. Of course he's eating dinner. There's been times where he's eaten risotto and just chilled, and other things, and pasta, etc., where we've just been waiting for him. But it's okay. Mm-hmm. It's okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, it would be good to see his reaction when he listens to this back.
Oh yes, oh yes.
I'm sure he'll really appreciate it. Yeah, you're right. Scott has been, I want to say, shitposting a little bit in some of the group chats. He's saved. I think it's safe to say he's upset a couple of people. With his chat about Novak, but you know, Scott is a massive Novak Djokovic fan as well as Andy Murray, so I can't begrudge him being delighted for Novak. I think he just needs to learn to read the room a little bit, so to speak. He's only a baby. He'll get there with time.
Scott?
Yeah.
He's old enough. He's wise enough. He's older than some tennis players.
Do you know who he's older? He's older than Casper Ruud.
So let's talk about that.
Did you like that segue?
Yes, great segue. I believe it was Casper's first round press conference, where someone had asked Casper about Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it. We're calling it Twitter because F that. Anyways, and so Casper had gone on like quite a few long, I would say, rants about certain tennis, quote unquote, with the little quote unquote hands, fingers gesture, journalists and experts. And he said, I read all about these so-called tennis experts, and it's insane. It annoys me. If you haven't played professionally in the past, it's just not good. And not to take more than 5% of tennis experts say at their word, because it's not the way it goes. It's interesting how people exaggerate on social media all the time. It shouldn't be taken seriously. And then he goes on to say, sometimes I like to interact because my opinion can matter. And of course, he's a professional tennis player. He says he must be really annoyed to reply. And of course, he's only replied to Scott Barclay. I forget his Barclay card, whatever.
At Barclay card 18.
18, yes. I mean, we all know who he is, and we can at him. And Craig Shapiro, another person who we won't need to mention any further. So it's literally just those two.
Imagine being the other person that Casper Ruud, one of the nicest guys in tennis, I think. You know, like you don't
Yes.
really hear people saying bad things about Casper Ruud. So imagine being the other person that annoyed Casper Ruud, other than Craig Shapiro. I mean, you've got to be a pretty high level of annoying to be on par with Craig Shapiro.
Oh, yeah.
Like for Casper Ruud to be like, I'm gonna reply to him because he talks absolute garbage. And who? Oh,
This
this
guy,
guy is
he
getting us
shows
on.
up in my For You. I need to talk to him. Just need to reply. So,
And who was that
Scott.
guy?
Scotty Scott. There's been many times where I'm like, Scott, please. Like, you have Murray Musings in, like, your profile for us, and it's like it's for us of you're the third co-host here, who is of course still late. It's 2:17 right now, 8:17 your time. And I mean, I understand, needing dinner that late, but
I need dinner.
we've had definitely many times where we're like, okay, let's postpone this, or let's get toast, let's get tea, like
I love how
before we have
Scott's
our
not here.
podcast.
He's not here to defend himself.
No, he's
Although,
not.
to be honest, he doesn't
And
deserve
it's
to defend himself,
no.
friends of the pod. He does not deserve anyone's support in this matter. And we're just going to talk shit about him
Yeah.
to all of you until he joins.
Listeners, he's made risotto, leaving me wait for like an hour, probably an hour and maybe 15 minutes. I'm exaggerating here just slightly because I'm a little annoyed. But I mean, listeners, let's be honest. Scott is a mess on Twitter. He is a mess. And he is a mess with our podcast.
And he is a mess in Money Musings HQ. You should see his desk. It's
Oh my
disgusting.
goodness, yes.
It's disgusting. There's like there's
Unprofessional.
bits of risotto everywhere. There's macaroni cheese. There's cheesy
All of the
boxes.
papers of his tweets and screeds that he's written, just gotten them ready for Novak's wins. It's just a mess.
Fingerprints everywhere, packets of Haribo lying around. It's like there's a child running around Money Musings HQ.
Child.
So yeah, so that's basically what's happened to Scott, and you know, he's had another unfortunately very well known tennis player replying to him, but he's been getting into like it's getting on the brink now of like, are they obsessed with each other a little bit with this spat? And he even replied to him today or yesterday when Scott tweeted about a certain Novak Djokovic's 24th Grand Slam title. And Kyrgios replied to it, saying,
Nick Kyrgios.
what did he say? Did he say awesome or insane? Something,
Insane.
it was a one word answer, but still, I was like, do you have notifications
I think he
for him
does.
now? I think he must have. Like,
He must have.
I'm sorry you're so obsessed with me. I genuinely once got to reply to that to him. Why are you so
Yes.
obsessed with me?
It's gotten weird. It's gotten
Because that's,
surreal.
I mean, I can get it when because like, you know, when Scott tweets about him, he's clearly casting the fishing net. Like he's hoping for a, you know, he loves the drama, right?
He does?
Oh, did you not know that? Is
Oh
this
my
brand new
goodness.
information? But Scott, for anyone who doesn't hasn't followed Scott on Twitter, he is an enjoyer of the drama,
Yes.
and he will tweet things to get a reaction from people, and he 9 times out of 10 he does. So recently, I feel like since he got that first response from Kyrgios, he's been poking the bear.
Oh, yeah.
And he's been trying to get more, and like and he's been tweeting his full name, and obviously Kyrgios, whether he's got notifications for him or he searches his own name and it comes up, responds to it, and they get into a bit of a like ding dong over it. But this time, he didn't even mention This was nothing to do with him. It was about Novak Djokovic, and he replied to it. So clearly, he's either following him on a burner account,
Yes.
which I think he probably is, and then
Oh,
replying to
yes.
him from his own account, or he has notifications set up for Scott, or both.
Yeah, and of course, every player, let's be honest, probably has a burner account. So, yeah,
Well,
they see things.
Casper
And
definitely has
Coco
a
has
burner
said
account.
that she sees tweets as well.
Let's talk about Coco freaking Gauff.
Let's talk
Let's
about
talk
her.
about that little beauty. I keep calling her a little beauty, like, because she's a lot younger than me, but actually,
Yeah,
like,
she's only
very tall.
19 still. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
But she's very tall,
Oh,
as it
yes.
should. So I would absolutely be looking up to Coco, both metaphorically and literally, if she was standing next to me.
Okay.
She was
So,
amazing.
do we want to
Absolutely amazing.
run through all of her wins, or how do you want to do this? Because
Well, if
I'm
you've got
perfectly
if,
fine with talking about the final itself. I
yeah,
mean,
you know me in terms of like my memory when it comes to tennis matches, I can't remember back far enough to
exactly.
go over matches, so I'm happy to just go with the final,
Okay.
which
I
was
just wanted
fantastic.
to talk about the 6-0, 6-2 quarterfinal that she won
Yeah.
against Yelena Ostapenko. And the score, just says it for itself. So let's move on, because I mean, it was quick. It was
It
nice.
was. I that match was over so quickly that I didn't get to see it. And I think it was incredible because, came on the back of Ostapenko's quite stunning win over Swiatek. So, I wasn't expecting, when I saw that score, I wasn't expecting it to be such a, I don't want to say walkover and make it sound disrespectful, but it was really like, she annihilated her, didn't
Yeah,
she?
it felt like more of a mental burnout of like a, okay, I won against Iga and now, I can just take on Coco and then just
And Coco's like,
flatline.
actually, no, he can't.
Yeah, actually, like, no, like, I've seen you beat Iga. I just beat Iga in Cincy, and now I know how to beat you. So I don't know. I don't
Do you
know.
think that was the moment for Coco when she was like, this trophy's mine?
So in her last press conference, she said that she felt the trophy was hers closer to the final. And the night before the final, she had to talk with her boyfriend and just like relax her until like she fell asleep at like 1 o'clock and just be like, okay, now the final, the trophy is in reach. So definitely not even before the semifinal, who she played Mukova, and she played Mukova in the Cincy final as well. So yeah, I did not see, to be honest with you, Coco beating Iga, and I saw Iga winning the whole entire thing. So I will be on record, because I was on record before in our last podcast, just afraid that, Coco would not win this, and I didn't, think that Coco could do it, but I mean, she did it. And I don't want to sound like one of her haters, as she said in her press conference, her finalist, her final, excuse me, speech, saying that they thought that they were pouring water on my fire, but instead they were pouring gasoline, which was an amazing like comeback of like, okay, look at all the haters that I saw on Twitter. Just reading them before I got to the final here. And I came on the court and I did the thing.
I saw someone tweeted Coco really asked to hold that mic so she could drop it. I was
Exactly.
like, oh my God. Her speech was it's phenomenal. And
Yeah.
as I was listening to it, I was just like, this, she's 19 years old and she's such a an old soul
Yes.
in a way. Like she's so mature. And you forget, like this was her 17th Grand Slam.
Oh, wow.
Which
Okay, yeah.
absolutely wild because she's been on the tour since she was
Since
15.
15. Yeah. I did not
And
even count them.
she's so incredibly mature. I mean, I can't even remember what I was like when I was 19, but I wasn't that mature. No
Oh,
way.
God,
She's
no.
just so grown up, and I think such an amazing role model for young kids in sport everywhere. You know, she's just incredible. But let's talk about the actual final itself.
Okay, let's talk about it.
I went into it thinking it's going to be a great match, and actually this is one of those matches where I would have been quite delighted with any outcome, to be honest with you, because
Okay.
I do like Sabalenka. I think she's a great player, and I felt that her winning this would really cement her status as world number one, and it
Oh,
wouldn't
yes.
just be because she's only got it because Iga lost it, sort of thing. But also at the same time, I was so desperate to see Coco win her first slam, and I was like, if she wins, I'm going to be over the moon for her because she's worked so hard. She's had an amazing tournament. She would really, really deserve it, especially off the back of winning Cincy. Just be like the cherry on top of the cake. But my head was telling me that Sabalenka would win it. And after that first set, I was like, oh, I think, yeah, I think she is going to
Yeah,
win it
I
here.
thought it would be two sets.
I felt like in the first set, Coco maybe couldn't quite get a read on Sabalenka, just couldn't quite get a grip with her game. And then it was sort of, there were two things happened, I think. One, Coco upped her level massively. And Sabalenka sort of imploded a little bit, kind of fell apart. And obviously, good on Coco, she took advantage of that. But she never let her level drop. She lifted her game and she kept it at that level. And as long as she kept playing like that, I think she knew she was going to win. And as soon as like once Coco won the second set, it's like, oh, game on. Like,
Yeah,
I
I was
don't
excited.
know
I
what's
was
going to
like,
happen here.
is this, yeah, going to happen? Where I didn't want it to be another Madison Keys issue where, of course, Sabalenka beat her down from 0-6 bagel first set. And I'm like, Sabalenka, like, she can do it. She can, throw her backhand and just wildly create the angles and just win it. Like outright, and she didn't do that. And she said that she feels a little bit more emotional in the press conference, and that she's going for a drink tonight after it. And I think the thing is, Coco, yeah, as you said, she just put on the gas and she just went for it. I mean, 6-3, 6-2 is a great, final score line for her two sets to win 2 out of 3. So, I mean, it was amazing.
Because was it the third set where Coco went up like four love?
I was
I was
like,
trying to
she's
remember
got
what.
this.
I was trying to remember what order that had happened in. But yeah, like once she got that bit, and then obviously getting the double break, it was like, yeah, this is it. Game, set, and match. Like Coco would need to just sit down now and just not play the rest of the match for Sabalenka to win. The
I
only thing that could
honestly,
happen.
maybe it was just me wanting the revenge because I wanted a Maddie Coco final. I wanted a bagel. I feel bad, but I mean, the thing is, Madison has been so close to so many good matches, and to at least have her in the final again, like 2017, would have been justified, even though I would have preferred Coco to win it all. It's just, I mean, with that 4-0, I was like, can she bagel her? Like, is Sabalenka falling apart? And she didn't, which credit to her, but it was just so good to see Coco lift the trophy.
She Sabalenka took a medical timeout, didn't she? She had like cramp in her thigh, and I think that's when she started to play a little bit better after that, didn't she? I think that's when she actually won, like she actually got on the scoreboard, she won a couple of games. I think it was after that second break that she took the medical timeout to just like get her rub down in her thighs. But yeah, it was it game set in Matchbook. It was just, oh, it was amazing. It was
Yeah.
amazing, and I just loved the like the reaction of our mum and dad, and they're running off into the stands to hug them, and like, they came out and met her, and like she's sitting on the phone when she's just like sitting down, she's getting her phone out, she's trying. The thing, I took a screenshot of it and I tweeted it, and I was like, only Coco Gauff, it's such a vibe. She just won the US Open. And she's like on the phone to her mate, like, turn your TV on.
Yeah, trying to call her brother.
But she's trying to FaceTime her brother. And then I saw on Twitter, I can't remember who posted it, but it was a video of her brother watching it.
Yep.
In fact, it might have been Coco who posted it. I think it was
I think
Coco.
so. I think so.
Saying, no wonder I couldn't get through to him. I think he's legend has it, he's still screaming now.
Yeah. It's just
So.
amazing how the whole entire family celebrated and how her dad was crying, and she said that, yeah, you cried and you were caught in 4K crying.
Yeah,
So
that was
you can't
amazing.
deny
That
it.
loved it. Yeah, brilliant. I'm so happy for her, and I really do think that this is the start of it for Coco. I can't see her just winning one slam and
Of
then
course not.
taking a, sort of kind of rolling back. She seems like the kind of young woman who's exceptionally determined, and she's really going to want to make her mark more now. So I'm really excited about like the next year, what the next year has to bring. And again, I don't know if anyone knows this, she's only 19. She's got a very long career ahead of her.
And she'll definitely do well. I'm not going to forecast as of right now, like how many majors, because I don't want to put that pressure on her, even
Yeah.
though there's so many others that have already said, like when she was 15, is she the next Serena, et cetera, et cetera. It's just amazing to see her do it now.
Yeah. She's incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
Did you watch the men's match?
Huh?
Did
Which
you?
men's match? You mean the wheelchair men's
No,
match?
not the wheelchair one. Certain Novak Djokovic and Daniil Medvedev.
Oh, that happened.
That did happen.
I was tuned into Medvedev and Carlos.
Were you watching pickleball?
Oh yes, pickleball was exciting. Yes, I did see that match. Yes, I did see it in three sets, which was disappointing. Yes, there were good rallies. I saw somebody say that there were like really good points and it was one of the most exciting matches. And I asked our group chat, I was like, did we watch the same
Same
match?
match, yeah. I mean, I didn't think it was particularly exciting. I mean, I suppose obviously if you are like a hardcore Djokovic fan, of course
That's
it's
here.
exciting. Of course it's exciting. Speaking of hardcore Djokovic fans, where is he? Oh, he's entered the chat. The hardcore Djokovic fan of Murray Musings HQ. He's connecting to audio, so I'm just talking to fill the silence while he comes in. It's taking forever. Oh, there he is. Are you cut? No, he's on mute, for God's sake. Hi,
Hello,
Scott.
can you hear me?
We're just talking about hardcore Novak Djokovic fans, and literally as I said that's when you joined the chat.
Hi, yeah,
So
I'm here. How's
I
life?
feel like it's almost like it's like fate that you've joined at this time when we're literally just to talk about Novak Djokovic and Daniil Medvedev
But
and their
Peter was
match.
Peter was already on the podcast. Like
Well,
you
we did.
probably,
We I mean we mentioned it, but we wanted to wait for you to get here so that you could
but you already had
really
the
get
biggest Novak
connected.
fan in my amazing HQ Peter. Could he
Oh
not have?
yes, we
Could he not
actually
have?
talked about
Could he
the
not?
only one who's a 26-time major champion who has done the four finals this year, who won four US Opens, which Novak has as well, but it's fine. He hasn't won 26 majors like Alfie Hewitt has.
Yeah, of course.
So yes,
You're not,
so if you
you
want
don't often
to
think
offer your wisdom, insights into
into Novak.
the US Open champion right now, that's perfectly fine.
Into Novak,
We can
sure.
time sure, you for I, 5 minutes and then we'll move on.
Five minutes. Have we? What? Who have we talked about already? What have we talked
we've
about?
We've literally just started. Yeah.
So it's all about Novak. Is what I'm
only
just...
five minutes.
Because then we're going to talk about the Davis Cup.
Maybe yes. About 25 minutes, or is that?
Five minutes.
No.
We will cut you off. We'll just remove you from the chat.
Well, okay. So, like, on a serious note, like, Peter, you have to admit, it was an impressive tournament for Novak. It was. Like, Claire will admit that, because Claire is actually quite a fan of Novak.
Well, he only dropped two sets, didn't he? No, he didn't drop two sets. He had one five-set match, and the rest... Oh, so he did drop two sets.
Yes.
I'm really tired. So he'd won five-set match and everything else was just straight sets.
That's right, yes. And Peter, you have to acknowledge that Novak is the greatest men's tennis player of all time. You have to acknowledge it.
I could see a sign that says that.
Peter, will I read that and acknowledge that? But Peter, what are you in my heart?
Absolutely not.
What are you putting forth as your argument against him being the greatest?
I don't have an argument against him.
So you have no argument against it. Though, is what you're saying?
No.
Okay. So he is the greatest.
I'm not saying he is. I will never say.
Do you admit that he is? Do you admit that he is?
Yeah.
I mean, statistically, there's an argument for him. Will I ever say it? I mean. Yeah. I accidentally said the GOAT word like three podcast episodes ago, but that's perfectly fine. That's neither here nor there. But let's talk about his run, because I mean, Taylor Fritz was the only one other than Ben who did amazing this tournament, beating against him. I mean, he had Laszlo, he had Borna.
Are you insinuating that Novak had an easy draw?
Oh, he had the easiest cakewalk draw out of the top four seeds.
I'm gonna put forward something that Peter, I think you might concur with, like. Because I feel like this is something that's shared by a lot of casual kind of tennis fans. So I know a few people at work in my workplace who are casual tennis fans, and one of them came up to me and was like, "Men's tennis is just so like it's so in a slump now. It's so boring. You've just got one guy, and then sometimes you have this younger kid who can kind of beat him. But like apart from that, there's just no one else."
Yeah.
And he was like, "I just feel like sport's at its best when you have, you know." You have a few different guys who are just all competing and are big rivalries, and you've got this kind of like, you know, a hunk of people, like a few different people who can like who are contesting these top events, and it just feels like he doesn't have that, so it's just him all the time right now, which is interesting because as somebody who is just a massive Novak Djokovic fan, like I like, you know, obviously I'm like 24, that's great for him extending his lead. I think I agree. And I think also like Novak's been asked about it in press conferences. Of course he's gonna be like, you know, you've got Alcaraz, you've got all these players. He knows for a fact that like he doesn't have that same level of competition that he had 10 years ago. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You can tell, right? You can tell that he knows that he doesn't, it's not the level that Nadal was providing and that Federer was providing and Andy was providing. Do you know what I mean? Like he knows that, right? So it is interesting. It's a difficult situation because I was thinking today that like, yeah, you had so many pundits while Novak, you know, while we did have the big four and while they were all at the top, being like, like men's tennis will survive after the big four. It'll flourish onwards. It'll still move on. You'll see, like even without these guys, like it'll still flourish. But actually, like as soon as like three of them go, it's like, well, actually, there's still nobody else. It's just him right now. When we have
Novak, it doesn't flourish, which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Which you know, I think it's interesting because I was trying to be like, I wonder how we would all feel, like, you know, and even as a massive Novak fan, obviously I would be celebrating on Marsh Iron. How would we feel if it was Andy? Do you know what I mean?
Like, it would be amazing.
My God, it would be so good.
The creativity, the variety, like
the power that has. The genius.
Yes.
There would be many more episodes of Murray Muse if Andy was. If Andy
was I think that's more so on you, Scott, than
that's true, that's valid. That is valid.
I actually, that's funny you say that, Scott, because you remember you shared a message in our group chat recently about a podcast that's dedicated to Mr. Djokovic, and it's a weekly podcast. And I was like, remember when we were weekly?
Oh, yes.
But also, I think he gives their podcast a lot more content than Andy currently gives ours. So,
Listen, an Andy Murray podcast is always going to be random and flourishing in areas and then not flourishing in other areas. And that is perfectly us. Okay, that is perfectly us. But yeah, it's an interesting time. I think I simultaneously, and it's something that I think I would agree with. I can simultaneously be very happy as an Novak fan, but also like, Alcaraz, let's hurry up, man. Like, let's hurry up and get to that level of consistency where there's like, you know, we want more of those 5-set matches. Mm-hmm. And like, I saw a few people being like, oh, but Medvedev, you know, oh, you know, he's still there, he's still like playing. I think Medvedev's time of like, and I say this, you know, with awareness, tennis can change very quickly. I just, Medvedev, like, he had that US Open final, he had that like flourishing time, but like, he just got whipped in straight sets, like by a 36-year-old. Do you know what I mean? Maybe I'm being disrespectful to Medvedev here, but I was hoping.
I honestly don't think that you're being disrespectful, but I think Novak just upped his level because he knew he had to. He said in his press conference at the end, like, that he pretty much had to do it because he lost the Wimbledon final. He just felt like it was his time. And yes, he's been chasing the records for 3 years now, I believe he said, and realizing, of course, he's got, you know, number one status on lock. But I mean, to have the most majors aside from Alfie Hewitt, of course, I just think that, I mean, Novak just was going to be unbeatable. And I even thought that before, you know, going into, you know, the match, that he would win it. So
maybe
I've had him down to win the whole tournament, like right from the beginning. I just knew even if he played Alcaraz in the final, I thought he was going to do it.
And moving, and Peter, you'll be ecstatic. Like moving towards the end of this Novak segment. I think, you know, it's a nice kind of segue, almost, like, because Andy was quoted saying today in an interview, I think video interview with BBC, maybe, or was this yesterday? I can't remember. When he got asked about Novak, said that he believes that Novak's time when he made, like, he's all, remember, he kind of flexed a little bit. He was like, remember after the Wimbledon final, everyone was saying that it was just changing on the guard. And I was just like, no, and Novak's going to win much. It's like, of course you were, Andy. Of course you were. Of course, Andy. You had to be like, everyone was saying this and I was saying this other thing. And
I would just like everyone to know that they were wrong. And I was right.
And he says, yeah, he doesn't think that Novak's time winning major titles is at an end. Theoretically, like, how I hypothesize 30 majors. Is that too much for him? What do you think?
Six more?
Do you know what? I don't think it's unreasonable.
No, I don't
think
it is.
Six more is not unreasonable. I honestly think that he's going to go for at least 2 more years or so. I mean,
he's aging backwards. Aging backwards. He, you know, there were a few occasions in the match against Medvedev, particularly in that second set, when I thought he looked tired, and it's not usually a word.
Oh, come on, Claire.
It's not normally a word I use for Novak. Tired, but like, he also just goes to show that once he kind of sets his mind to it, because I stopped watching after the second set. I was too tired. I was like, I don't know how this is going to go. And it's either going to be Novak's exhausted, so he's either going to put his full energy into this third set and wrap it up in 3.
Exactly.
Or Medvedev is going to take advantage of the fact that he's tired and he's going to win it in 5. But either way, I have to go to my bed. And I thought it was more likely that it was going to be the 3-set option. Yeah. And of course, object, and that's exactly what he did. And so I thought, you know, he looks tired. However, he has that ability to be like, do you know what? I'm tired, but I can push through this and I can win it. And if I just win it, if I just push through, then it'll be over quicker.
True.
And he's not going anywhere anytime soon. He's going to win the Australian Open again next year.
I think he is.
I mean, the thing is, Medvedev is a hard court specialist. Do you think that he wants to win in Australia? Yes. Do I think that Medvedev can win against Novak? I mean, it's possible. It's possible. I mean, there's a realm of possibility where Novak can be beat in Australia. Do I think it's going to happen? I mean, would I bet on it? Would I put $5 on it? Sure. For fun,
Are you putting $100?
No, I would not put $100 on that shit. No, absolutely not.
He can be beaten. Of course he can be beaten. And I think if he'd said to me a couple of years ago, after the US Open final, oh, this is it. Like, Medvedev, he can do this. He can. And but now, in hindsight, and I don't mean this disrespectfully to Medvedev, I like Medvedev a lot. He's what he's actually fast becoming one of my favourite players when Andy's not playing, which is more often these days. I think he beat Djokovic. He did play better than him during that US Open match. However, I think for the first time ever in that match, Djokovic crumbled under his own pressure.
Yep.
He wanted the calendar Grand Slam.
So badly.
So badly.
Yep.
That I think he actually broke himself under the weight of his own expectations.
Yes.
And allowed himself to be outplayed and outclassed by Medvedev. Agree.
And that was a straight test win back then, wasn't it? Yeah.
can't see that happening again.
No. Until eventually he does age.
Well, when he's 56, then 20 years.
His coach, Goran Ivanisevic, said that he could see Novak. He wants to play at the 2028 Olympics.
I could see him wanting to play another hard court. Just to have another gold medal.
Is that in LA? The 2020
yes.
Olympics? Yeah, okay, so it'll be a hard court.
Let's be honest. I think that he wants to, because I have problems with him. I think that he wants to at least equal Andy's 2 gold medals.
I just wondered where you were going with that.
I think that he wants to get Paris finally and get a gold medal on around his neck and then go for 2028.
I just know, who is he kidding?
I see that.
Who is he kidding? Because Andy's obviously going to win Paris.
He's in a... Andy's going to win Paris. Jesus. Put that in quotation marks.
I'll go to the betting shop tomorrow. Okay. I'll spend £10 on Andy money.
You give away your money, Claire. Can you give that £10 to me instead? better
what odds are you going to give me?
I'm not giving you any odds for that. It's going to be interesting to see how long Novak sticks around for. I think he's, you know, he's put a lot of work and he's put a lot of effort, and I love him. I love Novak. But
The love fest. Like, let's end this. I think this has gone.
I'll say the final thing. I think he's in a very kind of nice position in the sense that he's watched his three biggest rivals fall off a wee bit, and now he's in that position where he's like, okay, I'm just going to prolong my body as much as I can and like play just minimal tournaments, play all the tournaments, and nobody is there to challenge me really. So he's in that kind of nice position, and as a fan that's great, but as a neutral I can imagine it's frustrating. And that's the final thing we'll say. Let's talk Davis Cup. Yes.
So Andy has the third position of 32 wins and 3 losses in Davis Cup. Fred Perry has 34 wins and 4 losses. I think that Andy is going to go on for quite some time and get more than 34 wins in Davis
Wait, how
Cup.
many wins has he got, sorry?
32. Equaling Bobby Wilson.
So okay, Fred so he can... Perry's got the red. Wait, did you say Fred Perry?
Fred Perry, of course, yes. Has 34 wins.
Oh, this weekend. So Andy could break another record.
Yes.
Yeah, literally this week he could do that. Yeah, so I don't know. We should probably talk. If we're talking Davis Cup, obviously we're talking Andy, and obviously we're talking GB. But yep. Should we talk briefly about how we feel about the Davis Cup generally? Because interesting tweet from Stan Wawrinka today.
Uh huh.
It really was
slating the attendance numbers because
he's so bang on though. When you think about it, like that's a massive arena in Manchester.
Yeah,
and the fans were scattered around as well, so it just sounded really echoey and shit.
Yep.
Little pockets of fans here and there.
Mm-hmm.
If that was a home and away tie, like if that was in Switzerland, and who were they playing? Was it France? They were playing. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm, I think
if
so.
That was in Switzerland, or if it was in France, that place fine. Would have been bouncing.
Ruckus.
Absolutely bouncing. But it's so shit. This new format. It'll be amazing tomorrow, GB versus Australia. That place will be packed to the rafters.
Yeah, because Andy's there.
It's a home tie, and Andy's there. And look, when I think back to the Davis Cup ties last year in Glasgow, it was the exact same.
Yeah.
The matches that was like US and Netherlands, you could sit and count the number of people in the arena.
And that's sad.
It's really sad. And the Emirates isn't even as big an arena as the AO in Manchester. You can count them on the TV, and it's utterly pathetic. They've completely ruined the Davis Cup. When you think back to how incredible it was, like 2015, 2016, absolutely amazing. And now it's just this, it's just all they've done is tried to turn it into a money machine, and I bet you it's losing money.
It is, most definitely.
It's like, what are you turning your camera around there for, Scott? Listeners, we've got a little kitty.
There's a cat. That was Freya, sorry. I just wanted to show you guys. Again, not very good for audio medium. Apologies, listeners. Anyways, so it's just a bit shit, isn't it? Davis Cup right now, isn't it? Which is a bit of a tragedy. But also, it has been like that for like... I googled this. He bought it in 2018. Was it 2018? Bought it. So it's like it's been like that for years now. So it's like, are we not all used to it just being a bit terrible? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, or is it just every year we're like, oh god?
I think we are used to it being terrible, but then when it starts, it reminds us of just how terrible it is. Because I used to get remember. I know they said there was the reasons behind it, the logistics and that. Like sometimes the Davis Cup weekends interrupted the season and it was harder to get certain players. I mean, 2015, there wasn't a problem. Like Andy made sure he was available for every tie.
Exactly.
And this now, I feel like it's just the build up to Davis Cup weekend was always so exciting. You're like, this week, Friday, we've got the singles, two singles matches, Saturday doubles, Davis Cup was
fun.
An amazing day. And then you went to the Sunday where it was like, make or break, what's it going to be? And now it's just...
And it was because it was done over the weekend as well, so it just made more sense, you know? It made more sense.
France, and... Switzerland on a Tuesday in Manchester.
Yeah.
Like...
despair. And I saw some people like arguing, oh, you know, it's because it's a weekday. It's like, yeah, it's because it's a weekday. But like, it didn't used to be a weekday, and that was why it was better. Do you know what I mean? Like, that was why it was better.
I mean, Team GB. I know they're playing tomorrow, Wednesday, but other than that, they have. I mean, they've got the best days for the tie. They've got the Friday and they've got the Sunday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The rest of it's just I feel sorry for the players from the other teams.
Yeah, I agree.
Imagine playing a massive tie, like your massive Davis Cup tie, and you're playing to like 120 people in a massive arena.
What's not? That's Stan Wawrinka, winner of three major titles. Like, yeah, playing in front of nobody. Like, yeah. You know? And it's such a brutal situation. Regardless, we're looking forward to Andy playing, right? We're happy Andy's playing. We're happy that Andy's getting back on the court. We'll be tuning in. How are we feeling? I mean, it's a good sign that Andy decided to play, right? After kind of taking himself off the counting himself out almost.
He was pretty down, wasn't he? After the US Open, and you know, said, "Look, I don't know if I deserve my place." And I was like, "God, that's hard to hear."
Yeah,
that's hard to hear you say that. But it's good to see him there, and I mean, Leon will pick him to play. I suppose you know the way it works between Andy and Leon, the relationship that they've got. Leon will probably ask Andy what he wants to do.
Yes, probably.
Do you want to play singles, or would you rather play doubles? And what ties do you want to do it? You know, like, Andy's kind of earned a status as, like, almost like the elder statesman.
I literally was just about to say the elder statesman of the group. And just say, hey, just play doubles with Neil and call it a day.
Yeah.
I'm perfectly fine with Cam and Dan playing singles.
I think Andy will want to play singles at some point.
I think he will.
Who he plays against, I don't know. I mean, I'm not even sure what the lineup is for Australia tomorrow. I've not seen their team.
Yeah. So the teams are Alex Demonor, Max Purcell, mm-hmm. Jordan Thompson, Tanasi Kokkinakis, and Matthew Ebden for doubles, which is going to be tough for doubles.
That's a good team, isn't it? The Australian team. That's a good lineup.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
Andy can beat all of them except for Demonor. So let's just not...
I didn't want to say that, but thank you.
As long as he doesn't play Alex... He can beat Purcell, it'll be tough, but he can beat Purcell, he can beat Jordan Thompson. He beat Jordan Thompson this year, in fact. Can't remember what tournament, but he did beat Jordan Thompson.
Did he? Make a call of when that was, Claire. Hold on, let me Google.
Sure, he beat him.
Chat amongst yourself.
He beat Max Purcell in a... Wait, Peter, come on, help me. He did beat Jordan Thompson this year, I'm sure of it.
It's not immediately coming up, I'll say that.
Or was it Liam Brody who beat Jordan Thompson? Look, someone beat Jordan Thompson.
Andy Murray's played Jordan Thompson once. Unfortunately, Jordan Thompson did win that one.
That was at Queens. He won that once. That he was a lucky winner. I thought they'd played again since. It must have been, I'm totally rambling now. It must have been another British player was playing Jordan Thompson. And I was like, I hate that guy because he beat Andy at Queens.
And that'll be it, right? Yes.
Mm. Yeah. And Andy beat Max in Canada.
Yes, right. So he hasn't beaten Jordan, but he can do it. Because let's also remember that Jordan's a better grass court player than he is a hard court player.
Yes.
And this is on hard indoors, which is Andy's surface. So
did you just imply that grass wasn't Andy's surface?
I felt
the implication that Jordan's
not as good
surface was better on hard court.
Sure. I'll take that. Yeah, no, I'll go with that. I was just being an asshole. not the first time somebody's called me that this week.
Talk
about that later.
Andy will not play Demonor tomorrow. For sure, he's not going to take that lineup. Like, there's no way. Unless he's being Andy and being like a cocky bastard and be like, do you know what? Fuck it, I'm going to take him in front of the home crowd.
Yeah.
Davis Cup's a bit different. You know, like at Queens, where he lost.
And Laver Cup, it's different. Yeah.
Yep, it's different. So, do you know what? It's actually really hard to call. I think he will play singles at some point.
Yes. Because he wants at least 34 or 35. Yes.
Yeah. I would concur.
34 or 35 wins.
He also went on record, I think today, saying that he believes that Team GB can win the Davis Cup this year. Mm-hmm.
But why not?
I mean, with their doubles options, they have a chance.
I honestly argue Andy in doubles, like, man can be world number one in doubles. Do you know that?
Such a good doubles player. He's such a good doubles player. Yeah.
Yeah, I just fully believe he could be. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Like, it's also a difficult situation as well, because I remember when Andy spoke out about, you know, oh, I don't know about Davis Cup because I don't know. Like, yeah, I just don't know. Like, other players have earned their spot more than me. And then he's saying that with full awareness that the majority of people who've purchased tickets for it have come to see him. Do you know what I mean? And I know, like, Andy will be the first to say it's not a popularity contest. It's about who's in the best form. But, like, everyone in those stands wants to see Andy Murray play.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like it's not a popularity contest, but also at the same time, it kind of is. Do you know what I mean? When it comes to, it's brutal to say, right? But
there will be a lot of people there who are Cam fans.
Sure, that's true.
Like, I suspect, a big group of the Cam fandom will be there.
Yeah, Nori Nation will rise up and they'll be there.
Yeah.
So, you know, but...
No,
like,
for sure, we're not going to...
Everyone else just wants to see Andy, don't they?
Yeah, and I mean, Jack Draper will be there. Hopefully Kyle Edmund will be in the stands rooting them on in the little bleacher part, you know what I'm saying.
And, you know, Dan Evans will be there putting in an absolute shift as the cheerleader on the bench because he does put in a proper shift during Davis.
You know, we'll say what you want about Dan Evans, and we certainly have in this podcast, but the man does cheer loudly.
Oh my God, it's amazing.
Yeah, no, he does. he does indeed. So yeah, it'll be interesting. Like it's a weird time. It's a weird time for Davis Cup, isn't it? It came at that week where it's like the US Open's just finished, and it's just like, oh yeah, this is now happening. so it almost feels like, so we breathe now that David, like, now that the US Open's over. Oh yeah, we're doing this. So yeah, it's an interesting kind of time for it. But yeah, we'll be tuning in. We'll be tuning in to see what the kind of decisions are and who's playing where and who's playing when. And yeah, can I say, I'm aware that we're about to wrap up because we're keeping the podcast nice and short today, folks. Did we talk about the controversy? Like, did I miss a controversial chat about Simona Halep earlier in this episode, or was that touched on?
Oh, we did not touch that issue.
Can I bring that up slightly? Very slightly, yeah. Right now then.
Go ahead.
Can we get slightly dark about it? What do you think about it? What do you think about it? What do you make of it?
She's guilty. 4 years suspension. She's guilty.
I don't think they do it lightly. Four years. It's a long, long time.
It is a long time. It is.
Her career's over. I mean, I'm sad for her. I like Simona Halep.
And as far as I'm aware, as well, because she's obviously appealing the decision, right? There's a very small likelihood that appeal go through, right? In these cases. Am I right in thinking that?
You have to appeal. You know, like, you can't... If you don't appeal,
you're guilty.
Basically just admitting you're guilty. So if she's determined that she's innocent, then she has to put in an appeal of some sort and hope for the best. But it's one of these, you know... I saw your tweet earlier on, Scott, and I must admit, I nearly howled when I read it, and it was, if I had to work with Patrick Montoglu, I might turn to drugs as well. I don't blame you for that tweet, because, you know...
Patrick Montoglu. Yeah, coach of Simona Halep, of course, for listening. Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Of course, it's brought out some of the WTA stars as a past and present on Twitter, with Serena alluding to it in a few kind of... interesting tweets from her. And
what did Serena mean by that? Like, I saw Serena's tweet that said 8 is a better number.
Sure, it's because she got beaten by Halep in the Wimbledon final, and if she'd won Wimbledon, that Wimbledon final, she would have 8 Wimbledon titles, she was beaten by Halep in that final, so that is kind of what people are, you know, interpreting from that.
Well, you know what they do in athletics, if it turns out that someone who's a medalist...
For sure, yes. They give it back over,
They get stripped of their medal, and the person who came second gets upgraded to gold.
I'm aware that that doesn't happen in tennis, though, right? Because Sharapova went through this, and she kept her titles. I don't think that'll be happening in this situation. Of course, it's one of those things where it's like...
It'd be harder to prove exactly when the doping took place to enhance a specific performance. Whereas I think in athletics, it's a bit easier. They can be like, well, you just ran 100 metres in 7 sure. seconds, so obviously you've
sure.
took yeah. some sort of performance enhancer for that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's yeah, it's an interesting one. I just love Peter. It's like, she's Gilly, get her away.
I mean, let's be honest. With 4 years, it's like just so slam the books at her and just call it a day. Because
yeah, she's
I feel bad for her fans, but the thing is, like,
they don't have 4 year sentences like for nothing. Do you know what I mean?
Yes,
like,
exactly. Thank you, and I'll just say that.
Yeah, for sure, and. I think I'd agree with you, Pierre. And Andy's definitely on a side note, Andy's definitely like in the past talked about dopers and been like, get them off the tour, so he'd agree too. Exactly. So on that note, we'll wrap up this episode of Murray Musings. We've talked about the US Open. Given extensive, I missed it, but I'll give a shout out to Coco as well. Actually, we talked about her quite a bit before I entered the chat, and yeah, blown away by her performance. So shout out to Coco, shout out to Peter's main man Novak Djokovic for winning the men's title. Peter, what's that look for? Come on, man.
I'm expressionless right now. Sure. I'm so just waiting for you to wrap it up and I can stop the recording, to be honest.
Shout out to Coco and Novak. And shout out to Andy, who's playing this week. We're looking forward to seeing him play, fingers crossed for him. And shout out to Simone Halep, who we'll never see again. And on that note, folks.
Wow. On that note, thanks so much for listening.
I've been Scott. She's been Claire. This has been Murray Musings. Bye.
Yeah. Bye.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you've been listening to the Murray Musings podcast.